Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.
What is with these high-achieving lawyer types? One more to add to the list is Adam Liao, who not only is the winner of last year's MasterChef and the creator of a brand new cookbook called Two Asian Kitchens, apparently he's also got child prodigy to add to the list. Good morning, Adam. Thanks for talking to us.
Good morning.
How old exactly were you when you finished high school?
I think I just turned 16.
Okay, and that's when you started uni as well?
Yes, that's right.
So you had a double degree by the time you were...
I think I was 20 when I graduated.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it was a lot of work though.
I bet it was, yeah. So at what point did cooking start to appeal more than law as a career?
As a career, probably in the last couple of months. But I've always had a real passion for cooking and I've enjoyed it, but it never really seemed like something I was good enough to do as a career or that I could reasonably do, you know, after I'd already finished uni. But I guess I'm really lucky to be doing what I'm doing now and I'm really enjoying it.
It was funny, on the show, that the season you're on, there were a number of, well, I remember Claire of note, she was also a lawyer who was looking to get out.
Yeah. Students as well, and Marion's got a law degree as well.
See, there's a few in there. That's right. It's a common theme here that the people are just wanting to break out from those billable hours and cook a souffle or something.
Well, I think I'm maybe the exception to the rule. I really enjoyed being a lawyer, and I do that sometimes, but I'm just having a bit more fun doing what I'm doing now. But yeah, there does seem to be a tendency for people to get out of the law as soon as they've got into it.
Right. Now, I guess cooking is a much less stable option than law. You were on TV a few months back talking about how difficult it was actually to transition back into Sydney life. How are you going on that front?
Yeah, there's no problems. I've got a great place, a nice area, and I've got a really nice kitchen that I cook in every day, so I'm happy as can be.
Good to hear. The rental market here is just mean, isn't it?
Yeah, it was more so that I was just travelling so much for work, and I was in Sydney probably, you know, 2 days a fortnight, a day a week or so, and just trying to get around to those inspections and stuff was hard to fit into the schedule.
I must say, it's good initially, I'm sure, to have the MasterChef tag to take around with you, especially with the book and getting going, but after a while, is that going to be a bit of a pain, do you think? Is that going to be more of a hindrance than a help?
It really depends on how people look at it. You know, I accept that it was a great period of my life and, you know, I try and move on and do bigger and better things. But I guess you'll always be looked on as being the MasterChef winner and I don't shy away from that at all. I think it's a great thing to be and I'm really proud of it. But maybe ask me in 5 years' time.
And new restaurant from you. Are we going to see that opening its doors soon?
Hopefully, the plan is, you know, before the end of the year, and we're pushing hard at it, but we're trying to find time in the schedule to get everything done. The book tour is sort of kicking off now, so I'm out of action for the next 3 weeks, but as soon as that's finished, hopefully we can get the restaurant open.
Nice. That's a pretty good problem to have. Can't open a restaurant yet because I'm on a book tour.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm having a good time at the moment.
Great.
Well, I guess it'd be good to... It always makes sense when you've got someone who's written the book, the cooking book. What are some general tips you'd want to give us for cooking from your style and from who you are as a chef? What's a good recipe you just want to sort of throw away that we could maybe whip up tonight?
Okay. I think a Thai recipe, a larp, is actually something that is so easy to do. And you talk about these, you know, weeknight dinners as being one-pot affairs, and you get such complex flavours from a Thai or Laotian larp, you don't really think that it's actually only cooked in one pot. You cook it very quickly, and then you sort of dress it like a salad. And it's so easy to do. There's a recipe in my book for one with duck, but it can be done with chicken and beef and all seafood, all kinds of things, really. That's something that I tend to knock up very often for dinner because it is so easy to do.
Yum.
That does sound good. Even at breakfast time, I don't mind that at all.
So overall, do you reckon you'd recommend the MasterChef experience?
I had an unbelievable time. You know, honestly, people talk about how it must have been so stressful and so hard, and it was throughout the process. But in retrospect now, it's just remembering all the good times when I had dinner at Marion's place the other day with Jonathan, who was sitting around just talking about all the fun we had. And it really was an amazing experience. I'm really grateful for it.
Well, thanks for having a chat with us, and all the best with Two Asian Kitchens as well.
Thanks, guys.
Do you remember your first mobile phone?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I call it the brick.
Yeah, mine wasn't too bad. Mine at the time was called a pocket phone. But you wouldn't put it in your pocket. It would really weigh it down.
Pull your pants down.
It would do such a thing, and especially if you went and bought the bigger battery for it.
Oh, if you wanted more than half an hour battery life?
Yeah. Oh, no, mine was okay. Mine lasted 8 hours, so that was pretty good. But you could buy a 12-hour battery, and hey, woo, big time.
Because then you needed a small wheelbarrow to pull it around behind you.
Oh, yeah, but that's all right. That's the price of, you know, new technology. It's great. The Daily Telly have put up today some old mobile phone ads on their website, and you can see the days when it was pretty much a suitcase, and they've just go through all these old ads of mobile phones. So,
but
go
it
and
was
look back.
Phenomenal technology, wasn't it? It was such a breakthrough.
It absolutely was, and the first ever mobile phone. It was in the very early 80s. Actually, it was installed in the boot of your car. Well, it was a car phone. It was installed in the boot of your car, and it took up a fair chunk, like an LPG tank would probably fill up most of your boot now.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. Imagine the radiation that came off that thing. From there, it then moved to the kind of handheld one with the massive kind of.
I know. Can you believe they used to install them in cars? Now everyone's doing everything possible to get us off our phones in the cars.
This is true.
Used to be installed right in the middle of it. You could sit there. Oh, there's my handbrake. There's my telephone.
And what a luxury that was too. Interesting, the mobile phone battery thing though, because it has gone. You'd have the last for days now. My new phone, my plan ran out. I got to upgrade. It barely lasts a day again. We've gone full circle. So my battery will, if I'm lucky, make it till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then that's it. I need to plug it into a charger again. So it's just, we've gone this full circle. And also, we were going there. We were going smaller for a while, but phones are getting bigger. Like the iPhone.
They are.
It's not a small phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very small. And the phones like that with the screens. They're not very small.
Nope.
And then you can buy the tablets, and there also can be phones as well. So there's mini tablet type things. So
yeah.
We're sort of going back. What's next? I wonder if we're going to be back installing it in the boot again. I just don't know what. We're going full circle with this stuff. So have a look. Check it out if you've got a few minutes while you're working today. Head onto the website and check out these ads because they are very funny. But you'll then and look at some of the boasts they make about the phones and think, hang on, that's better battery life than I get on my phone now.
Oh.
So anyway.
And you might hear the reminder every Christmas, pets are for life, not just for the holidays. Well, these ones are just for the holidays. Guide Dogs New South Wales need temporary puppy carers over Easter. Jane Bryce is a community education coordinator for Guide Dogs New South Wales. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Helen.
And now, Jane, why do you need puppy sitters?
Well, the dogs, when they are trained, need to be of a certain age. So we need somebody to look after the puppies until they reach that age, so that they can learn all the skills that they need to learn to become a fully-fledged guide dog. So, but in that early stage of their life, we're also introducing them to just basic routine about life and walking on lead and the fact that you get up in the morning, you know, there's a routine. They're exposed to life in general so that when they go out to become a guide dog, they've been socialised, they've been exposed to, you know, a wide variety of experiences.
So since they go to school and then you pick them up at the end of the day, is that how it goes for normal situations like that?
No.
Okay.
You keep the puppy at home.
Yep.
So because the pup's going to be at home, we do ask that there is somebody home for the majority of the day. So it doesn't mean the person has to be home all day, but it does mean that they're home for the majority of the day. So if you've got kids and you walk them to school, you'll take the puppy on the walk to school. If you're going to go down and do some exercise yourself, so some walking around the park, you take the puppy and take them for a walk around the park.
Mm. Okay.
Definitely, no carrying them in the handbag, like the style.
No. Look, once they reach about 12 weeks of age, they're getting pretty bulky. And I don't know about you, but I can't carry them.
What about one of those baby Bjorns? You can just strap them on the front.
Look, I'm sure that would work quite well for some dogs, but our pups need to be on the ground getting used to walking because they're going to walk quite a lot of miles in their years that they work. So thousands of kilometres they're going to walk. So we need to get them used to walking from a very early age.
Does it break people's hearts to give the puppies back?
Look, some people find it a real challenge, but the benefit is that you can get another puppy.
Okay.
And but you also know that what you're doing in doing the puppy raising is actually helping to enhance the independent mobility of a person who's blind or vision impaired. So, you know why you're doing it.
It would be a great feeling to know that. It's an expensive process to train the dog as well. How does that happen in terms of when do they get trained if they're with the owner for so long as well? And how does the money get raised for that too?
Okay, well, let's start off with the puppy raising expenses. Anybody who provides us either temporary care or does choose to take the longer route of raising a puppy for us, it does not cost them anything. So we provide all the equipment, so the bed, the grooming stuff, the food, the vet care.
Little plastic bags to take to the park with you.
Oh, well, you might have to buy some.
Yeah, right.
Do actually provide them free of charge for you. So no puppy raiser has to pay out of their pocket for expenses associated with the puppy raising. So we then, as an organisation, rely on the community's generosity and support to be able to provide the guide dogs fully trained to a person who would need one. But if we charge somebody, we'd be charging about $30,000 for a guide dog, but all services provided by Guide Dogs, so our dogs, our canes, all the other equipment and training that we provide is all provided free of charge, but only through the community's generosity. We don't receive any government funding.
Mm-hmm. So over Easter specifically, how long do you need people to care for these dogs for?
Okay, well, we've got a number of different blocks of time. We've got some blocks of time just for 4 days, and there are some other families that are going away for the school holidays, so they're away for 2 weeks. So a number of dogs, a number of options. So we'd really love people to be in contact with us to look after one of our puppies or one of the older dogs that's finished its training but waiting for placement, or one of our pets as therapy dogs that's waiting for placement as well.
Great. We'll get all the details about that up on our Facebook page. It's on the Aaron and Helen page. We'll have all the details if you want to be a temporary puppy foster carer. That'll do it.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you.
Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.